This is Ham College, episode 125, for June 6, 2025. Ham College is brought to you by ICOM. Whether you're logging contacts from a remote site or contesting with your club, ICOM has the gear to keep you connected, competitive, and in control. Welcome to another episode of Ham College. I'm Professor Thomas.
And I'm Dean Martin.
And we've got questions for you tonight.
And we have answers for you tonight.
Both?
Just like Radio Shack used to have.
And we see how that worked out for them.
Not too good.
Well, it did for a long time, I guess.
Yeah.
Tonight, we're studying for the amateur technician exam. But what did we study on the technician exam last time around?
Let me think about it. It could have been electromagnetic wave properties, maybe. Things like wavelength versus frequency, nature and velocity of electromagnetic waves, relationship of wavelength and frequency, electromagnetic spectrum definitions, UHF, VHF, and HF.
Cool. Well, this time let's talk more about got that type of thing, like propagation modes, paradoxy, meteor scatter, auroral propagation, tropospheric ducting, F region skip, and line of sight and the radio horizon. Sound good for you?
Sounds good.
You know, this is not
try to say it.
You mentioned earlier before the show tonight, didn't we just talk about propagation? Didn't we have a video on that?
Yeah.
And we did, but we're going to talk about it again, and this is only these modes we just mentioned right here.
Okay.
The first time we went through the technician exam was a little different than this time, apparently, as far as the order we covered things.
I guess that's good.
Yeah.
Mix it up a little bit.
That is. And since these will be the ones that are going to be on the test, I guess that's even
better. Yeah, that'd be good ones to cover then.
Yep. Cool. Why don't we just jump right on in? Why are simplex UHF signals rarely heard beyond the radio horizon? A, they're too weak to go very far.
B, FCC regulations prohibit them from going more than 50 miles.
C, UHF signals are usually not propagated by the ionosphere.
Or D, UHF signals are absorbed by the ionospheric D region. That's almost a tongue twister. We ain't play games, put a quarter in the jar every time we mispronounce one of these propagation methods.
We'd be millionaires.
Okay. Why is simplex UHF signal rarely heard beyond? Too weak to go very far. No, they're not too weak. FCC regulations, there's no regulation I'm aware of either that prohibits them going over 50 miles. UHF signals are usually not propagated by the ionosphere. I think that's going to be it, more than likely. Or D, UHF signals are absorbed by the ionospheric D region. I need to quit saying that. I don't have to put a quarter in the jar. I'm going with C. UHF signals are usually not propagated by the ionosphere.
I'm going to agree with you. That's what they're saying over in the chat room as well.
Okay.
Makes sense. Cool. There you go.
All right, we'll do that. We'll take that. That wasn't too hard, though.
No. You know, well, that's just saying for UHF signals. I think kind of the same thing's true for VHF signals as well.
Yeah, probably so.
Yeah. Got one for me?
Yeah, got one right here. What is a characteristic of HF communication compared with communications on VHF and higher frequencies? A, HF antennas are generally smaller.
B, HF accommodates wider bandwidth signals.
C, long-distance ionospheric propagation is far more common on HF.
D, there is less atmospheric interference, static, on HF. Wow, they make this one pretty easy.
Well, if you've been on there before, well, most people taking this test haven't.
True. Yeah. What is a characteristic of HF communications compared with communications on VHF and higher frequencies? A, HF antennas are generally smaller. No. You know, VHF is, what, around 146 megahertz for 2 meters. That's very high frequencies. So HF has got to be a lot lower than that. HF, I think we discussed it not long ago. That's 3 to 30 megahertz, isn't it?
Yep.
So that's a lot lower frequency, which means a much longer wavelength. So
which
no.
Which means a lot longer antenna. A
lot longer antenna, not generally smaller. B, HF accommodates wider bandwidth signals. No, it doesn't accommodate wider bandwidth signals. C, long-distance ionospheric propagation is far more common on HF. I think that's your answer right there. Because D, there's less atmospheric interference, static, on HF. That's not true. If you've ever listened to HF, you know there's a lot more static there than there is on VHF and UHF. It's like on your broadcast radios. The AM band is MF, medium frequency, a little below HF, but it is plagued with static. If you don't have a good signal, and if it's lightning, any of those things cause a lot of static. You don't hear that as much on VHF, which the AM, or excuse me, the FM broadcast bands, like what, around 88 to almost 108 megahertz, that's VHF. You don't hear static on there. So, yeah, it's got to be C, long-distance ionospheric propagation is far more common on HF.
Got to be.
If you know anything at all about HF, it's pretty easy to come to that conclusion. That's one reason you want to get on HF is because you can take advantage of the ionosphere and get a longer distance. Boom.
There it is.
There. Okay. What is a characteristic of VHF signals received via auroral backscatter? Cool. A, they are often received from 10,000 miles or more.
B, they're distorted and the signal strength varies considerably.
C, they occur only during winter nighttime hours.
Or D, they're generally strongest when your antenna is aimed west. I'll receive from 10,000 miles or more. Distorted and signal strength varies considerably. That seems plausible. Occur only during the winter nighttime hours. I don't think so. But they probably would be nighttime. Generally strongest when your antenna is aimed west. So I don't think it's going to be between A and B. And I'm going to go with B. Because that aurora, it's constantly moving. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't really know the answer. I'm just guessing B.
I'm going to agree with you. Chat room, they're all saying B. They are. Distorted and signal strengths vary considerably.
That makes kind of sense to me if you think about what the aurora looks like.
You know, I had something I wanted to say about that since you were uncertain.
Okay.
Auroral backscatter. It's intense columns of auroral ionization at 60-mile altitudes within the auroral oval. Backscatter radio waves, including those on HF and VHF. Random motions of electrons spiraling around the field lines cause a Doppler spread that broadens the spectrum and the emissions to more or less noise-like, depending on how high a frequency is used. The radio auroras are observed mostly at high latitudes and rarely extend down to the middle latitudes. The occurrence of radio auroras depend on solar activity like flares or coronal holes or CMEs. The events are much more numerous during solar cycle maximas. Radio aurora includes the so-called afternoon radio aurora, which produces stronger but more distorted signals, and the Herring minima, the late-night radio aurora, substorming phase, returns with variable signal strength and lesser Doppler spread. The propagation ranges for the predominantly backscatter mode extending up to about 1,250 miles in the east-west plane, but strongest signals are observed most frequently from the north at nearby sites on the same latitude.
Which of the following types of propagation is most commonly associated with occasional strong signals on the 10, 6, and 2-meter bands from beyond the radio horizon? A. Backscatter.
B. Sporadic E.
C. D region absorption.
Or D. Grayling propagation. I wasn't paying attention. Which of the following types of propagation is most commonly associated with occasional strong signals on 10, 6, and 2 meters beyond the radio horizon? Backscatter, sporadic E, D region absorption, or Grayling? Well, I know Grayling has no effect on 2 meters, so I don't think it has any on 6 and probably not on 10. Because if 10 is open, it's open. So I'm going to say it's not D. And D region absorption, I don't think so. Backscatter, I'm just going to take a stab at it because I'm really not certain on this. I'm going to say it's B, sporadic E.
I think you're right. That's the one that only kind of makes any sense there.
Chat room, yeah, they're favoring B there. And it is.
Here, I'll give you one.
I was unsure about that. Tom says, good signals with sporadic E, but fluttering like mad. Which of the following effects may allow radio signals to travel beyond obstructions between the transmitting and receiving stations? A, knife edge diffraction.
B, Faraday rotation.
C, quantum tunneling.
Or D, Doppler shift. Which of the following effects may allow radio signals to travel beyond obstructions? I'm going to just go right for the answer here, because I think it's going to be A, knife edge diffraction, because I actually saw that in the reference in the document that you sent us.
Well, that's, not the, I not mean, the I won't questions. Be sending anybody a document if they're about to take the test.
Well, I know, but I'm just being honest because I read it on there, and okay. I think that's what the answer is.
Well,
But the other ones on there don't really make much sense to be it either. Faraday rotation, quantum tunneling, and Doppler shift is a thing, but that's not going to be the reason for that.
I'm going to agree with you. Knife edge diffraction. Well, you can see you got a radio signal there, and we got a building or other object in the way. Line of sight is a blue line there on top. It goes across the top. It's not blocked by the building or obstruction there. The signal can kind of knife edge diffract around the edge of the building or a hill or whatever you got there, and you can pick up the signal down in the region on the ground there. That really is kind of shadowed. It's not within the line of sight.
That's pretty crazy because I honestly didn't really know that was a thing. I'm sure it must have been on the test when I took it, but I don't remember it.
Well, since you got it right and you seem to know a good bit about it, why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Okay. Give me a second to get my thoughts together here.
In other words, it's your turn to read.
Well, knife edge diffraction is the propagation mode where radio waves are bent around sharp edges. For example, this mode is used to send radio signals over a mountain range when a line of sight path is not available. However, the angle cannot be too sharp or the signal will not diffract. Diffraction depends on the relationship between the wavelength and the size of the obstacle. In other words, size of the obstacle in wavelengths. Lower frequencies diffract around large, smooth obstacles such as hills more easily. For example, in many cases where VHF or higher frequency communication is not possible due to shadowing by a hill, it's still possible to communicate using the upper part of the HF band where the surface wave is still of little use. Fracking phenomena by small obstacles is also important at high frequencies. Signals for urban cellular telephony tend to be dominated by ground plane effects as they travel over the rooftops of the urban environment. They then diffract over roof edges to the street, where multipath propagation, absorption, and diffraction phenomena dominate. That's pretty interesting. I had no idea about that. It's a shame you can't actually see the radio waves where they travel.
You know, and that's something I always wanted to invent, and I should get a patent on.
Especially like X-ray glasses? Yeah,
I wanted a pair of RF binoculars where you could look and you'd see the radio waves.
You should invent that. You'd probably get rich. What type of propagation is responsible for allowing over-the-horizon VHF and UHF communications to ranges of approximately 300 miles on a regular basis? A. Tropospheric ducting.
B. D region refraction.
C. F2 region refraction.
Or D. Faraday rotation. What type of propagation is responsible for allowing over-the-horizon VHF and UHF communications to ranges of approximately 300 miles on a regular basis? Okay, I'm going to start at the bottom. Talking about VHF. Faraday rotation. I don't think that's got anything to do with it. C, F2 region refraction. You know, VHF really doesn't bounce off of the layers of the ionosphere so much. Not at the F2 region anyway. B, D region refraction. There again, I don't think that's it. A, tropospheric ducting. Well, having used VHF and UHF for a lot of years now, tropospheric ducting, something we also call a temperature inversion, which is actually kind of what causes tropospheric ducting. Hey, that's what they're saying over in the chat room.
Yeah, that's pretty cool when that happens, too.
It is.
It's been going on around here recently.
I've heard it mornings and evenings here some recently.
I've been hearing it a lot in the mornings.
Yeah. The way we can usually tell is you'll hear repeaters on frequencies that we normally hear.
Yeah, hear multiple repeaters on there.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be different call signs than are normally on there. So that's a cool phenomenon. And you can get on air and make some fairly good distance contacts. Sudden changes in the atmosphere, vertical moisture content, and temperature profiles can, on random occasions, make UHF, VHF, and microwave signals propagate up to about 1,200 miles, and for ducting modes even farther, beyond the normal radio horizon. The inversion layer is mostly observed over high-pressure regions, but there are several tropospheric weather conditions which create these randomly occurring propagation modes. Inversion layer's ability for non-ducting is typically found between 300 and 3,280 feet, and for ducting about 1,600 to 9,800 feet. And the duration of the events are typically for several hours up to several days. Higher frequencies experience the most dramatic increase in signal strengths, while on low VHF and HF, the effect is negligible. I'm kind of going to disagree on that because I don't think it's negligible. As a matter of fact, I know on a FM broadcast, it can do this ducting modes, and you can get signals from hundreds of miles away. So it's not negligible. Propagation path attenuation may be below free space loss. Some of the lesser inversion types related to warm ground and cooler air moisture content occur regularly at certain times of the year and time of the day. A typical example could be the late summer, early morning tropospheric enhancements that bring in signals from distances up to a few hundred miles for a couple of hours until it's undone by the sun's warming effect. And you can see there I'm showing a radio signal goes up. It gets trapped in a tropospheric duct where the air is warmer above where the duct is. And it just kind of bounces around in there, comes down somewhere else, and it's a two-way event if you're using a two-way radio.
It's really a fun normal phenomenon.
It is one of the most interesting things when you first get licensed and you're on VHF and you catch a good tropospheric duct. You know, I've talked to St. Louis on a walkie-talkie before.
Yeah.
Now, you wouldn't do that normally.
Nope. Give away something?
Yeah. Take a quick break and give away something.
Well, I let the cat out of the bag, didn't I?
I can't imagine what we'd give away.
It's not my Ham College t-shirt, that's for sure.
We'll be back in just a moment. You can find out.
Summer's on the horizon, and for amateur radio operators, that means one thing. Field Day is almost here. Mark your calendars for June 28th through 29th when hams across the country head outdoors, fire up their rigs, and put their skills to the test. Whether you're logging contacts from a remote site or contesting with your club, ICOM has the gear to keep you connected, competitive, and in control. Remote ready, contest capable, and built for serious signal, step into the future of amateur radio with ICOM's powerhouse trio. The IC7760 HF digital transceiver, the ICPW2 1 kilowatt HF 50 megahertz linear amplifier, and the all-new RC7760 remote controller. Designed to work in perfect harmony, this system offers full remote operation, high output power, and seamless integration across the bands. The RC7760 remote controller serves as an extra control head, and up to five can be registered to the RF deck, though only one can be active at a time. For wireless connectivity, simply connect a commercially available Wi-Fi access point via the LAN port. Whether you're working from the shack, the field, or a remote site, you'll experience crystal clear audio, digital precision, and amplifier-grade power, all from a single, unified interface. It's the ideal setup for contesters, MCOM operators, and high-demand users who expect more from their gear. The IC7300 combines intuitive touchscreen control, real-time spectrum display, and superior signal purity into one compact rig. Built for satellite, EME, and weak signal enthusiasts, the IC9700 combines all-mode operation on VHF, UHF, and 1.2 GHz. The IC2730A now features a high-contrast black display. It offers everything operators love: true dual-band operation, independent control knobs, and optional Bluetooth compatibility for hands-free operation. The IC718 is a favorite among new hams and portable operators, offering simple operation, rugged construction, and clean audio with DSP filtering. For more information about all of ICOM's great amateur radios, visit icomamerica.com/amateur today.
Hey, that's a great idea. Anybody would love to win this thing, man. ICOM Ham Crew t-shirt?
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome. I've got one. I think I wore mine here last month, if I'm not mistaken.
A lot of people have loved to wear that. How could you get one?
It's really easy. Just send an email to hamcollege@amateurlogic.tv. That's all you need is an email and a name. You don't really need, you need a shirt size, but we don't care about that. They'll contact you for that.
Yeah.
So just send an email to hamcollege@amateurlogic.tv. You'll be entered into the drawing.
You can say hello. You can say nothing at all as long as you send an email. Or you can put a little message, which this month's winner actually had a message in here.
Cool.
As a matter of fact, this could be the longest message we've ever received
from a winner. It may be.
Yeah. He said, I would love to have a chance to win a ICOM t-shirt. In fact, I finally bought my retirement rig that I have wanted ever since I saw one in 2014. The IC7300.
Nice.
It's a good retirement rig.
Yep.
Why? Because my ears are old and can't hear anything if the noise is too much. The IC7300 noise reduction filter is awesome. Yeah, it's got DSP noise reduction.
Yep. Audio is really great on that.
Without it, I would struggle greatly to do voice mode. My old workhorse was the IC706, which was still working great when I sold it. And when I find a company who makes stuff that's bulletproof, you can bet they've got my business for life. The KD0UUU, longtime listener of your excellent YouTube channel. So now would be a good time for any of you watching. Just drop us an email, hamcollege@amateurlogic.tv. We don't harvest the emails as soon as we've chosen a winner and told ICOM who they need to contact to get their size and address from. That's it. The slate is wiped clean, so you have to enter every month.
So you've already cleared the queue out now for the next round, right?
I have.
So it's a good time to go ahead and get your entry in. While you're watching this, go ahead and fire up your email, hamcollege@amateurlogic.tv. Send yours in for next month.
There you go. Excellent idea. We got some more questions to go tonight.
Well, we got some more answers.
All right.
Maybe some right ones, maybe some wrong ones.
Who actually had the last question? I think I answered the last one. So this one will be yours. What band is best suited for communicating via media scatter? A, 33 centimeters.
B, 6 meters.
C, 2 meters.
D, 70 centimeters. Meteor scatter. I have never done that. I don't even know anybody that really has.
Gordo has.
Gordo?
Yeah.
I figured. I do know Gordo. He's done it all.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's my hero, man. 70 centimeters. That's UHF. I don't think so. 2 meters. I don't think so. 33 centimeters. That's way up there. I'm going to go with B, 6 meters. That's one that kind of seems to make a little sense to me. But I don't know if that's it.
I would think it's either B or C.
Yeah. I'm a lean towards B, I think. That's 50 megahertz-ish.
Yeah. Chat room saying B.
That must be it, then.
Let's find out. It is.
Meteor scattering relies on reflecting radio waves off the intensely ionized columns of air generated by meteors. While this mode's very short duration, often only from a fraction of a second to a couple of seconds per event, the meteor burst communication allows remote stations to communicate to a station that may be hundreds of miles up to over 1,000 miles away, without the expense required for a satellite link. This mode is generally useful on VHF frequencies between 30 and 250 megahertz. So the VHF thing would have worked too, the 2 meters.
I thought 2 meters would work.
Yeah.
So I don't know why.
But people from the South probably don't use it because only the last milliseconds it takes us that long just to get started talking.
And listening.
What causes tropospheric ducting? A, discharges of lightning during electrical storms.
B, sunspots and solar flares.
C, updrafts from hurricanes and tornadoes.
D, temperature inversions in the atmosphere.
Tornado scatter. Now that's a new mode. That'd
be pretty cool. That is. That's the rig goes with it. What causes tropospheric ducting? Discharges of lightning during electrical storms. No. The sunspots and solar flares. That's not tropospheric ducting. C, updrafts from hurricanes and tornadoes. No. D, I remember hearing somebody say this earlier tonight. Temperature inversion in the atmosphere. I think I was the one who said that.
Could have been you.
Yeah.
Sounds like something you would have said.
It does, doesn't it? Chat room, that's what they're saying. It is. temperature inversions in the atmosphere.
There you go. We started off pretty strong with that, but we could usually kind of run out of steam on those knuckle bumps before the show's over.
Well, you know, I'll run out of sound effects. What is generally the best time for long distance 10-meter band propagation via the F region? A, from dawn to shortly after sunset during periods of high sunspot activity.
B, from shortly after sunset to dawn during periods of high sunspot activity.
C, from dawn to shortly after sunset during periods of low sunspot activity.
Or D, from shortly after sunset to dawn during periods of low sunspot activity. I'm going to go ahead and scratch off those bottom two because the sunspots do matter and the low activity is less likely for it to happen. B, from shortly after sunset to dawn, that would mean the nighttime period. That's not going to be it either because I think it's going to be daytime when the sun's out. The sunspot's going to affect the daylight hours because it's not blocked by the Earth. So I'm going with A.
A.
From dawn to shortly after sunset during periods of high sunspot activity.
Okay. Chat room saying A. Notice I'm not saying anything. I'm just going to wait and see what the answer is. You're right. There you go. I'll use another sound effect.
One more sound effect.
Yeah.
That's all the sound effects, right? So.
The F region of the ionosphere is home for the F layer of ionization. The F region contains ionized gases at a height of around 100 to 500 miles above sea level. Generally speaking, the F region has the highest concentration of free electrons and ions anywhere in the atmosphere. It may be thought of as comprising two layers, the F1 layer and the F2 layer. It acts as a dependable reflector of HF radio signals as it's not affected by atmospheric conditions, although its ionic composition varies with the sunspot cycle. It reflects normal incident frequencies at or below the critical frequency, which is approximately 10 megahertz, and partially absorbs waves at higher frequencies. The F1 layer is the lower sector of the F layer and exists for about 100 to 140 miles above the surface of the Earth and only during daylight hours. The F1 layer merges into the F2 layer at night. Because the F2 layer remains by day and night, it's responsible for most skywave propagation of radio waves and long-distance high-frequency or shortwave radio communications. Critical F2 layer frequencies are the frequencies that will not go through the F2 layer. Under rare atmospheric conditions, F2 propagation can occur, resulting in VHF television and FM radio signals being received over great distances well beyond the normal 40 to 100-mile reception area. F region's pretty important.
Yeah. Which of the following bands may provide long-distance communications via the ionosphere's F region during the peak of the sunspot cycle? A, 6 and 10 meters.
B, 23 centimeters.
C, 70 centimeters and 1.25 meters.
D, all these choices are correct. Which of the following bands may provide long-distance communication via the ionosphere's F region during the peak of the sunspot cycle? Well, let's start at the bottom. All these choices are not correct. C, 70 centimeters and 1.25 meters. Those aren't affected by the sunspot cycle. B, 23 centimeters. That's not affected by the sunspot cycle. Sunspot mostly affects frequencies lower than that. So I'm going to say it's A, 6 and 10 meters. There we go. A. And then one final question for tonight. Why is the radio horizon for VHF and UHF signals more distant than the visual horizon? A, radio signals move somewhat faster than the speed of light.
B, radio waves are not blocked by dust particles.
C, the atmosphere refracts radio waves slightly.
D, radio waves are blocked by dust particles. Okay. I see a pattern here. Why is the radio horizon for VHF and UHF signals more distant than the visual horizon? Radio signals are somewhat faster than the speed of light. But they're not. They travel at the speed of light. B, radio waves are not blocked by dust particles. I don't think that has anything to do with it. Atmosphere refracts radio waves slightly. That seems plausible. D, radio waves are blocked by dust particles. Well, we're not talking about being blocked. I'm going with C on this. The atmosphere refracts radio waves slightly. C, Charlie.
I'm agreeing with you.
The other ones don't make any sense to me to be it.
No, so the others are just way out in left field somewhere.
Uh-huh. We're up in the ionosphere.
There you go.
You realize we made it through this whole thing unscathed? No buzzers?
You're correct. I think the chips just fell in the right places tonight.
Speaking of chips, oh, there he is. He's in there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's it.
Some of the questions were interesting. I didn't really understand. I didn't know the answer to off the top of my head, but the other ones didn't make much sense to me, so it was pretty easy to narrow them down. I'm saying the alternate three were like just like this one. They're kind of out there.
Okay. Yeah. If the answers are way wrong, it's a lot easier to pick out the right answer.
Yeah, right.
Is that what you were saying?
That's exactly what I said.
Okay. That's not what I heard, but, you know.
You have your hearing checked.
Yeah. But I thought that's where you were going.
Yeah, that's where I was going.
So now would be a good time to mention that. If you're going to take your technician exam, you should do a little study ahead of time. Of course, join us right here on Ham College because we're going to go over all the questions and answers and give you our opinion on
stuff.
And why an answer might be right and why another one might be wrong. But there are some other things you can do as well. You can go online. There's a lot of sites now where you can take tests. Practice test online to see how you're doing. But don't do that strictly. Do some other study as well. There's other resources.
Suggest?
You can find books on the ARRL.org website. A couple of different ones come to mind. ARRL has their own study guide with the questions and answers. Plus, they are now carrying the Gordon West study guides. Yep. Those have been our preferred ones. For years.
Use them for years and years.
And, you know, full disclosure, Gordo is a friend. But I really do like his material. He does much better at explaining things than we do. So if you're going to buy a book, I kind of like
that. Can't go wrong with
one.
The Gordo books.
Yep. But ARRL does have another one. This is the Ham Radio License Manual. It's a little thicker, spiral bound here. A lot more pages, pictures, diagrams, text. If you want to dig a little deeper into why the right answer is the right answer, this will get you a little further down the road. It's
a little bit more verbose.
More information, if you really want to know. So before we get out of here tonight, Dean, any final thoughts?
No. If you're not a licensed ham yet, check with your local club. There's a field day coming up soon. Mm-hmm. And you might want to go out there and hang out with some of those guys. They welcome visitors.
They do. And a lot of them have what they call a go-to station.
Which get on the air.
Mm-hmm. And you can come in and you can get on the air and make some contacts with, a licensed operator. Mm-hmm. Standing there with you at the same time, so it's legal for you to get on the air and make a few.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Go check it out.
Yeah, and you'll probably see several different kind of activities going on with different radios, different bands, and Probably even see some people with computers hooked to their radios.
Oh, yeah, guaranteed.
All kinds of stuff. So what would I say on the way out the door here?
I was just about to ask you that. You took the words right out of my mouth.
We've got High Society, which is our social media sites, facebook.com/group/hamcollege or /amateurlogic.
You can follow us at Ham College on Twitter or at Amateur Logic, either one.
Or on X.
Same thing.
Or groups.io/g/amateurlogic. You can go there and sign up on the Groups.io group, and you get an email when we're going to be doing the next live stream or when an episode has been released. You know, Tommy, that's a spiffy shirt you're wearing there tonight.
You like that?
What if a guy wanted one similar just without the two dudes hanging out on it?
Oh, yeah. You can go get those at the official swag shop, shop.spreadshirt.com/amateurlogic. You can get Amateur Logic swag, Ham College swag, cups, mugs, backpacks, caps, shirts, all kind of stuff. There might even be some socks on there. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. It's all kind of cool stuff on there.
7-3, everybody.
7-3, everybody. Good night.